Checking your cell phone while walking or sitting is pretty natural these days. But how much you bend over and what position you get into can cause serious damage to your neck and spine. Bet you didn't know that. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's unlikely that you're going to give up your cell phone, but it makes sense to know how to avoid serious injury. And we have a couple of people who can help with that. Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. And Lori, great to have you back.
It's good to be here. That's good to be here. Let me put my phone down. I'll get back to you on that.
Oh, man. Bill Boisenall with us as well, senior physical therapist at UW Hospitals and Clinics. Good to see you again, Bill.
Good morning, Larry. Thank you. And I wish I could find my phone. This is how you prevent neck problems? Lose your phone.
Well, I'll tell you what, there's some new research there on the impact of looking down at cell phones and what damage it can do. At, you know, you look around, you're at public places anymore, and everybody's head's
everywhere.
Down.
You know, I was sitting, I noticed this yesterday, I was at my twins' futsal game. I was sitting in the bleachers. And, you know, we always say, oh, all those teenagers, all those kids. Well, I looked around, I mean, the bleachers, you know, half the parents had their heads down on a phone. And I thought, well, geez, you know, your kids are out there playing. You know, right. Didn't we come to watch them? But but we're all just, it's so alluring, you know. Oh, did I get an email? Oh, what's on Facebook? Oh, you know, someone Snapchatted me. And and it's so hard to let go of it.
And it's, you know, we spend a fair amount of time. There's some research on this, isn't there? The amount of time we spend per day.
One study that estimated that people spend an average of 2 to 4 hours per day. So if you multiply that by a year, 365 days, you're talking thousands of hours for a number of people out there. Mm-hmm. And that's what gets us into trouble. It's, you know, the brief moments and a couple hours on a day. If it was just, you know, every so often, it wouldn't be an issue. But for people where it is a daily posture position that they're in, I mean, it really adds up over time.
And it's even higher for high schoolers.
Well, yeah, because so many of them are spending time not necessarily just on their electronic devices, but looking over at books and things like that. And then just the idea that over their lifetime, they're going to accumulate so many more hours because of the recency of the electronics for some of us older adults who didn't start, you know, dropping our heads to 50-degree angles until we were a little bit older. We weren't going to accumulate as many hours.
Right, and for us it was more when we used to read books, paper books, where, you know, our heads would be down in a position potentially for hours and hours, and people would get in trouble with that. It's like everything else we've talked about all along here, you know, any single posture for prolonged periods of time, a certain activity over and over and over again, the repetition is what can get people into some trouble.
Well, now, the head itself weighs about 12 pounds, I guess, and so we're always carrying that. But how does the inclination of the neck change the stress? You know, let's say it's a 15 degree versus a 30 degree.
Well, it's a basic physics question. And so when I was explaining to my 15-year-old last night, who was always has his face in his phone, you know, about this, and he said, well, why is that? And I said, it's physics, because the more your head is tilted down, the longer the lever arm is from your axis of rotation to the center of mass of the limb, in this case, your head. So the greater you incline your head, the more you're moving that mass off of the axis of rotation. So it's a longer lever arm, and so it creates more load back at your neck trying to hold it up.
And the analogy I use is a bowling ball. There are 12-pound bowling balls. And so if you grab the bowling ball and put it in one hand, the palm of your hand, but have your elbow bent so it's the bowling ball is close to your chest, to your shoulder, you could hold that for a long time. If you start straightening out your elbow a little bit, the hand moves further away from your body, that bowling ball gets heavier and heavier and heavier. And it's the same analogy with our heads. Are they aligned over the rest of our body or not?
And so a 15-degree tilt is equivalent to about 27 pounds, so that's a couple of bowling balls.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And a 30-degree tilt, was it 40 pounds?
40
yes.
pounds. Yep.
Yes. So you can see it increases incrementally.
A 60-degree tilt, what's a 60-degree tilt look like? Is your chin on your chest?
Well, it depends upon your range of motion and how many chins you have. you know, but 45 degrees is half of a 90 degree, and 60 is 15 degrees more than that. So it's slightly more than, you know, 45
degrees. 60 is extreme, but there are people who are sitting in that posture, especially the phones are in their lap. And so, you know, the same recommendation they used to give when people were reading books is if you can bring the phone or the book closer up to you, that allows your head and neck to stay in a more erect posture or position.
Okay.
If the phone is down kind of in our laps or down by our belly buttons and we're looking down at it, then you have a lot more neck flexion or bend than you would if that phone was in a different position.
And the effects, I mean, if you do this over a long period of time, what do we...
I don't think we know because we haven't had that experience. You know, these are still relatively new, and usually we don't see these problems fall out until people have done these, been in these postures in large numbers for a long period of time, and that's when things start to show up. So the question is whether or not, you know, humans will evolve to having stronger neck muscles in response to this kind of load that's always on it. If you start younger and you gradually build yourself up, is it like training? Will your neck muscles just get stronger? Or will you start to see failure of some of the soft tissues in your neck and people show up with neck pain and upper back pain and posterior shoulder pain? We don't know for sure yet.
Right. But like other postural issues, muscles fatigue, and then muscles can become painful and sore themselves. Muscles fatigue to a point where they're not supporting the ligaments and the joints of the neck as well, so more load falls on the disc and facet joints. And you could, in theory, develop some arthritic changes over time. You know, and again, for most people, they can tolerate this position for probably months and months and a few years before they start noticing anything. But if they have an underlying, if they've had a previous neck injury or their job also requires them to sit in this forward head posture, then you put the phone on top of that, they can start having headaches and neck pain and pain down into their shoulders for the structures that are just being overstressed.
Yeah. If you have your hand on your chin kind of supporting your head, does that help at all or?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Just like reading a book, if you put your chin on your hands then and support it so that the muscles are not holding the entire load, but your hands are holding some of the load too, absolutely it helps.
Yeah. You know, 10 years from now, when we're you and the three of us are on the radio talking about this, we're going to say, you know, back 10 years ago, we used to look down. Now it's all in our eyeglasses.
That's right.
Right, exactly.
Whatever.
Exactly. Yes.
We don't have that problem anymore.
Yeah.
Could be anyway. Yeah. Well, we have some callers online. Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody, our guests, taking a look at the physical impact of texting and getting on your phone all the time, but certainly talking about your aches and pains and sprains and strains as well. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Miller Show Facebook page. Post your questions or comments there. David in West Milwaukee's been waiting a bit here, so let's go to David. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. Good morning.
Morning.
I'm 62 years old and finding it a little difficult to go outside for my power walks in some inclement days, especially when it's icy. So I'm trying to develop something indoors that I can do that both builds up my core and is aerobic. And I've heard that burpees are exactly that kind of exercise to do. And so I'm trying burpees at 62 and not 16 and finding out my body's letting me know that.
Yeah. Last time I did one of those was high school, I think.
Yeah. Yes.
And so what I want to do is I want to do a burpee and on the bottom side do a push-up and when I'm standing up to do a jumping jack to go with it. And I don't want to tear anything. And so I'm wondering how I prep for that and how I might build in between days to build up the strength so I don't have any problems.
And I guess they are kind of popular now.
So
the CrossFit crowd.
Right, exactly. So how many of these are you doing and how many of these do you intend to do as part of your routine?
Oh, I haven't started any yet. I've been doing 10 jumping jacks here and there. And the area between my kneecap and the tibia has a little bit of tenderness after I do 10 jumping jacks. So that's why I'm finding out I better go slow here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, again, how many are you thinking about doing? Is this going to be a 30-minute bout of burpees and jumping jacks and push-ups? Or
I'm thinking about 15 minutes, 15, 20 minutes or so. Maybe jogging very much
gently.
In between.
You know. All right. Okay, well, that sounds like a plan. So some of the issues that you've encountered are you need to have the cardiorespiratory endurance, which you probably have if you've been doing your power walks. I'm less concerned about having the cardiorespiratory fitness. You need sufficient range of motion in all of your joints. So if you're doing burpees, you need a lot of hip flexibility, knees, ankle, and feet. So if any of those joints lack sufficient mobility for you to get into the burpee position that you want to get into, you're going to start stealing motion from adjacent joints that perhaps are not ready for it, and then your joints are going to start squawking at you. So you need range of motion, and you need strength in that range. So if you've been walking, you're probably strong in a fairly limited range of motion, in the range of motion that your joints need to go through for walking. Burpees are a completely different range to work into. So I would start by going through the range of motion, making sure I had sufficient flexibility in all my joints to get in the burpee position. So you might start with just some stretching and trying to get in that position and relaxing and stretching all of your joints for a limited period of time. And then as you get into, and if that feels okay, then you can start doing maybe some walkouts. You know, instead of the sort of hopping burpee, you can walk in and out to make sure you have sufficient mobility. And gradually work your way up to doing a full burpee.
And when you're talking about the stretching, you mean I should go into a squat and just relax?
Yes, just squat. Mm-hmm. Make sure you have the mobility in your toes, ankles, feet, knees, hips, and low back to get into that position. Because you want to be able to get into it statically before you try to go into it dynamically. Because when you do it dynamically is when you're going to tear something.
Yeah.
So I'd be doing a warm-up that would incorporate that then.
Yes, as part of a warm-up. But before you ever do burpees as training, you would do this kind of stretching for a couple weeks first and make sure you had enough mobility to actually do it.
Yeah. Isn't there something else that could substitute for burpees?
Oh, well, yeah, there's any number of exercises. If you're looking for some kind of indoor core strength training, you know, I mean, if you go to your public library, they have a ton of exercise videos that you can try out that might be a good mix for you. Yoga videos are fantastic. If you want to build your core, you can do yoga for strength. That will be much easier on your joints than burpees will be. Mm-hmm. And I assure you, you will be aerobic and you'll be sweating when you're done.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, David, your goal is really a good one. And the idea of the ice outdoor, we really have to be careful. And again, I don't know if this works for you, besides the things that we talked about, the transition, you know, getting a treadmill or maybe a stationary bike. There are a number of places you can even get used indoor exercise equipment that would allow you to get the aerobics that you're after, along with the other things that would give you strengthening and core as well. So maybe think about that too.
Yep, something else to consider. Good luck, David. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We're going to turn to Laura at Appleton next, but just a reminder, you can join in too. Question about physical activity and aches and pains with our two guests, Bill Boisenault and Laurie Tyne Brody. Give us a call at 800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're getting great advice from physical therapists Laurie Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault. Great to have them along. Thank you for listening in. And now, Laura in Appleton, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi. Well, I guess my question is, do I just have to accept joint pain as a fact of life now that I'm well into middle age? It just seems that every few months or so, I seem to injure a different part of my body through physical activity. You know, in the last 2.5 years, it's been either my lower back and hip or my knees or my hamstring or my shoulder, and now it seems like the top of the hip flexor groin region is acting up. And, you know, I try to keep these areas strong through various exercises. I have seen physical therapists in the last few years. And I try alternate activities. So if running starts to bother me, you know, I'll do more stationary cycling or I'll do some exercise DVDs. And I'm always trying to keep up the strength. You know, I kind of identify with your last caller with his question about the burpees. I've had to alter the way I do those as well. I simply can't handle that impact anymore. So do I just have to live with this, or is joint pain something that can get better through rest or exercise? I'm kind of running out of options at this point.
Well, Laura, it's a pretty frustrating spot to be in, but it sounds like there's kind of two issues. One, if you're talking about injuries, injuries can be prevented in most cases, as opposed to recovery, which is a separate issue. You know, in terms of injuring your back or hamstrings or your, you know, you're pulling a calf muscle, I think there are ways to avoid those, transitioning. You know, as we talked about with our first caller, David, it was a way to transition into an activity. And that's where a physical therapist, sometimes a personal trainer, can coach you how to start an activity and then knowing when and how to increase the intensity, the duration of the activity itself. And also tied to that is cross-training. You know, doing more than one activity also can help prevent injuries. And in terms of recovery, it sounds like you've done that. You've tried to adapt or you've changed to a new activity. But, you know, generally we try to encourage people to do more than one thing for aerobics, do more than one type of strengthening or core work so your body is loaded in different ways, different intensities over a period of weeks or months.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Would it be such that, you know, maybe I have to give up on the like training for the longer runs at this point and just kind of include the running as an alternate activity mixed in with the other stuff? I mean, I was really hoping, the most I've ever done is a 10K. I was really hoping to train for a half marathon, but that fell apart last summer. You know, when I thought I strained a hamstring, but it seems to be more than that. Is that no longer realistic?
You know, I'm a glass half full person, so I always feel like people can achieve that. It may not be the route that you think you ought to take to get there. So, for example, you know, I don't know how many miles you're running, but the, you know, recommendations that you run X number of miles to train, I don't know that that's necessarily the case. I think the more you add up miles every week, particularly as we get towards middle age, you know, your connective tissues can't tolerate that. So mixing in your land-based running with other kinds of cross-training activities should be sufficient to get you to do that. I don't think you have to run, you know, 12 or 13 miles for training in order to run a half marathon. So I think dialing back your running and mixing in other types of training at the same time should get you where you need to go.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Laura, before you, if you're still there, if I could ask, have you seen a physical therapist only when you've been injured?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
It's something I think I probably could set it up otherwise, but in the past, I know there had to be a doctor referral involved, but...
Okay. Yeah. Well, the reason I'm asking is that, you know, seeing a physical therapist with the goal of, I want to be able to run a half marathon and I need some coaching and advice how to get from point A to point B, and have the work with you more from a wellness perspective as opposed to an injury recovery perspective. And
okay.
And potentially, you know, there are physical therapists. I would think any physical therapist can help you with that, but physical therapists that are in the sports medicine realm are working more with people with goals like you have. And I agree with Lori. I like the glass half full approach to this, and it's just finding an alternative way. And depending on your insurance, you may not need a doctor's referral. It's not always necessary to see a physical therapist. If you call a clinic and just ask them to let them know what type of insurance you have, they should be able to let you know about that too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Great. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Laura. And Gary in Oregon, your turn. Hi, Gary.
Yeah, hello. Yeah, I was... in my car, I just pulled off the road, and I heard these familiar voices, so I thought I'd have a solution to their problem with the cell phone is, this is Gary Howard. I used to work with you guys on robotics.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
Hello, Gary.
I'm wonderful. Yeah, yeah. And well, I'm 67 years old, and I don't have a cell phone. So that's my way of dealing with it. I have just a landline. And I don't have any neck problems or any problems at all. I did have an issue. A year ago, I fell off my roof.
Oh, geez.
Broke my back, broke my arm, and broke my shoulder.
Oh, geez. Oh.
But I'm doing great because my kids tell me it's a good thing I'm tough because I'm sure not very smart.
So, Gary, you pulled over. What did you stop at, a restaurant or someplace?
Well, actually,
what are you calling on?
Well, what this is ever since I got hurt, my wife made me buy a track phone.
Oh,
so I've got one of these phones that I don't even know the number, and I charge it once a month.
Right.
And this is probably the first time I've used it in about 6 months. So it is a miracle. I do appreciate it, but it's just basically I can make phone calls on it is all I can do.
Yeah, there you go.
That's fine. That's perfect. That's perfect.
Well, Gary, if you find my phone driving around today, let me know.
Hey, it's good
Bill's
to hear you.
Yeah, good to hear your voice, Gary. And Bill's looking for his phone. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Don't have a phone now. That's one way to solve it. Catherine in Kenosha, your turn. Hi, Catherine.
Hey.
What can we do for you?
I'm just calling. My father is 67 years old, and he's having arthritis problems in his back. He has bulging discs in his back, and every morning he walks 4 miles. He loves it. You know, it's his way to relax and everything like that, but it's getting harder for him. So I'm just wondering, for Christmas, I was thinking maybe getting him a gym membership or something, maybe to do physical therapy or a trainer or something, but what's a way that he could stay active and not, you know, hurt himself more?
It's a great call and a great idea for a gift. A gym membership could be a really nice thing for him, especially when the weather gets, you know, again, as our previous caller talked about getting icy and things like that. Because he has a history of back problems, like seeing a physical therapist first, and kind of in an ideal world, there's a physical therapist in a clinic that's attached to a gym, or they have a gym right there on site. So that one, they could evaluate your dad's back and identify kind of the do's and don'ts related to exercise, activity, machines to use or to avoid. And then they can take him in the gym and put him on some of the equipment and make sure that he knows how to set it up for his height and his weight and his size and kind of coach him in terms of how to increase the intensity. That might be the ideal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a gym membership is often a good gift as long as it's something that fits with their lifestyle. So, you know, I have some people who say, oh, I would never take an exercise class. I can't stand being in a class or, I can't stand being inside. So some of it has to come from knowing your father's likes and dislikes. You know, does he mind going to a gym? Does he like to ride an exercise bike, or does he just really like to be outside? Then you might need to find some alternative for him that includes some outside activity.
Yeah.
And what do you have any ideas of anything that would be outside that he could do
I guess I go back to what Bill said, and that is perhaps he needs a consult or two with the PT to look at his flexibility, to see if he has sufficient flexibility in his hips, if he has good strength in his core, and dealing with some of the infrastructure that might help get him back doing his outside walking. Otherwise, things like snowshoeing, you know, if the snow isn't too deep or if he's got enough hip mobility to snowshoe or things like that outside might be fun for him.
Cross-country skis.
Cross-country skiing.
Easy to do.
Yep. Anything
like
that.
Or easy to learn.
Yeah. So much of it depends upon what he likes to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, those are all great. You know, I know it's been getting harder, and a couple times he's told me that he almost called me halfway through his walk to come pick him up because his back was hurting, but yet every day he's out there walking 4 miles.
Yeah.
Well, good for him and good for you.
Yeah, it seems like
if it's hurting him.
A trip to the PT, I think, he's only 67. That's young. He's got a lot of years, hopefully, to live with that back. So I'd have him see a PT for a couple of visits, encourage him to do that because it's something he loves to do. You want him to be able to keep doing it.
Yep. Absolutely. And then a lot of back problems, so he'd want to strengthen his core to make up for his back.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that and hip flexibility, as Laurie mentioned, that's really important. The more the hips can do, the less the back has to do. And also with his footwear, it would be important to look at whether he's wearing boots or certain types of shoes when he's outdoor. It can also make a difference on the position of your back, the posture of your back, and how much load is being absorbed as somebody walks along, too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, I never even thought of shoes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So if he goes in to see somebody, if he can bring in his normal walking shoes or boots, that would help the physical therapist.
That might be a good Christmas gift too. New shoes.
There you go. Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Catherine. Appreciate the call. Visiting with Laurie Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenall today from the University of Wisconsin, Bill, UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Laurie at UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. It's great to have them along. They come by once a month to be with us. And Peggy in Ingleside has a question for you. Peggy, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I'm in my car on my cell phone, and I just pulled over, but I may have to pull up. So I have a question. I'm 72. I have diabetic neuropathy. It's extremely painful. I work 60 hours a week, and it's getting harder and harder to maneuver to get to work and you know, do what I need to do.
Have a good day.
Thank you. So I was wondering, in terms of exercise, what would you recommend?
All right, diabetic neuropathy.
Well, the diabetic neuropathy
can you describe that a little bit?
Well, people who have diabetes often lose sensation sometimes in their hands and fingertips, and often in their feet. That's why care of their nails and feet is so important, because sometimes they can't feel if they have a cut or a sore, or their shoe is rubbing, and then they'll get a sore and it's hard to heal. But it's, by report, very painful. Usually in their feet. And so, you know, basically we do measures to try to keep them active, to try to enhance the circulation to their legs, any activity that keeps them moving and gets blood flow. So if they can walk, walking is good. If they can ride a bike, if they can use a new step or anything that's aerobic, that increases blood flow through the lower extremities. For many people, the pool is a good place to exercise, because it takes some of the weight off of their legs and their feet while they're moving in the water, either in the shallow end with loading of their feet, or in the deep end unloaded. But basically, activities to increase blood flow through the area.
Yeah, it's a challenging issue to be dealing with. It's not like some of the other callers where we can recommend a stretch or a certain type of strengthening exercise. It's more of a nerve problem as opposed to a muscle problem, and it's painful enough that makes it, you know, difficult for some people to exercise. I think Laurie's right. The pool, if that's a possibility, is really a good venue to not only work on circulation, but you work on strengthening in your core all at the same time.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks, Peggy, for calling. Jess in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
Well, I have a possible solution for your caller, a couple of calls before, about the runner with the arthritic condition and so on, the joint pain. I have arthritis in my knees, and when my doctor told me there was nothing they can do for me other than constantly give me prescriptions, I looked for alternatives. And what I found that worked for me is that in the ACEs program, it's called vitamin A, C, and E, with selenium, glucosamine, chondroitin, using natural anti-inflammatories, things of that nature. And in my case, I've actually helped reverse some of my my arthritic condition. So sometimes it's a nutritional deficiency that leads to some of these issues. In addition to strengthening the core areas around the joints and that kind of thing, that would help, you know, alleviate the condition. But the ACEs program for me helps. It might help her as well.
Oh.
Yeah, that was one point that we didn't get into, but you're absolutely right. Having the appropriate nutrition on board, it makes a huge difference. So he talked about what they call an anti-inflammatory diet, which is a lot of vitamin C, vitamin E, and then he talked about glucosamine and chondroitin, which are natural substances that are used by many people. And there was another listener who had a question about
Ryan
glucosamine
had a question about it, yeah.
And chondroitin. It does seem to work for probably 50% of the people. The research kind of shows that about half the people who take it notice improved symptoms, decreased use of anti-inflammatories, increased activity levels, and so on. It's not something that you notice immediately, but you have to take it for up to 3 months before you actually notice that you have improved your symptoms. But most of the research shows that after the research is concluded, most people do continue to take it, suggesting that they have noticed some benefit from it. So so that's certainly a relatively easy, although not inexpensive.
Yeah, and relatively safe.
The things I mentioned are relatively safe.
People are taking other medications. It's good to check in with their primary care doc and just make sure there's no reason why they shouldn't be following a diet like that.
Mm-hmm. Right, and if you have a shellfish allergy.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, there we go. Jess, thank you so much. I appreciate your call. And occasionally, I have some eye surgery coming up on Thursday of this week, so... Mm. I was told to not use fish oils mm-hmm. and some of my because I think it increases a slight increased risk of blood
bleeds
mm-hmm. bleeds
mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there's that
mm-hmm.
but
having the right nutrition all those chemicals and if you can get them naturally through your foods, through a balanced diet rather than taking a supplement, that's even better because no one's exactly sure which of the micronutrients in those are actually the most effective ones. So,
yep, there you go. Ann and Madison up next. By the way, we have open lines now. We can get you on pretty quickly, too, with your question or with your comment at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Ann and Madison, thank you for waiting. Hi.
Hi. I just had a comment about the neuropathy question. I actually had a little story about that. I had I'm an acupuncturist in Madison, and in my school training in Chicago, we had a man who came in, and he was quite heavy, about 400 pounds, and his legs were extremely purple. And he started coming in and getting regular treatments, and it was shocking. He was actually on schedule to get his legs amputated for it, and within 5 months, he canceled the surgery, and he was able to move, and his legs were back to a pretty normal color. He still struggled with a lot of issues, but he had at least regained a lot of movement and less pain in the legs. So I know that acupuncture, and I've seen that time and time again, work really well for neuropathy, so I just wanted to point that out.
Oh, thank you for calling. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for that.
And we had some other comments, online comments. Let's see. An email from Kathy says, I'm cooking today, and your talk on cell phone posture seems to be addressing the very same issues of repetitive stress on the neck and shoulders. Thanks for the reminder to straighten up while I cook. I was thinking about that because I did a chicken marsala last night, which involved looking at the my iPad. My head was down a fair amount because I hadn't done one of those in a while, and I'm looking at those directions. So, Kathy, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Well, and a reminder is sometimes it's a good thing. You put sticky someplace or a little note someplace. And it is straightening up, if you think about it. If you're in a certain posture for a prolonged period of time, it's best if you can apparently move in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
So if we're looking down at the phone, it's not only just lifting your head up, but kind of bring your head back up over your shoulders, squeeze your shoulder blades kind of together and down a little bit, kind of pulling your shoulders back and down, just kind of wakes up muscles that are in the back of the body mm-hmm. and back of the neck, maybe support you a little bit better. But kind of moving in that opposite direction is can be helpful.
The worst position is driving. I spend a lot of time behind the wheel of a car, and I find myself having to remind myself to sit up straight because the seats are designed to kind of contour and come around you. They tend to push your shoulders forward, and then my head comes forward as a response to that. So I have to think about bringing my head back, and when my head comes back, then I pull my shoulders back, but I'm actually pulling it back against the back of the seat because that's how they're designed.
Yeah, and when we're sitting, our head-neck posture oftentimes is dictated by the position of our hips and our low back. So if our hips roll backward and we slump in our low back, then our head and shoulders come forward. So mm-hmm. there's times when people, the issue is more sitting. I really work on the position of their lumbar spine and their hips to dictate how everything is aligned up above.
Well, I resolved part of my problem last night by having daughter Emily, dice the onion and slice the mushrooms.
Oh, you gave her the onion?
Delegation.
Oh, geez,
nice of you.
Larry.
Yeah, she did. I had to finish that one off because she was tears. tears in my eyes. She did a great job. Uh-huh. Devin Madison, it's your turn. Thank you very much for calling. Hi there.
So I was doing a lot of walking for exercise. I was walking about 3 miles a day, about five times a week. And then at the end of the summer, I developed some plantar fasciitis in my one foot. And I did go and get new shoes, and I got new orthotics, and I saw PT and got exercises, and it started getting better. And then I sprained my ankle, the same foot. And so I feel like, so now I'm, now I've got new, so that's been about 6 weeks with my sprained ankle. And the doc I saw originally said I did not need to do any exercises just to rest it. But then I finally went to see a PT last week and got some exercises. But my question is, what related to this, first of all, if you have any ideas about how long this is going to take to get better, and I mean, is one question I keep asking people, and of course nobody knows. But what can I do for exercise in the meantime? One of the things I'm wondering about is like taking like water aerobics classes. Is that going to hurt my ankle, or is that okay to do that?
Oh, I think getting in the pool is a great idea for your ankle sprain. So, okay. You know, whether you enjoy water aerobics or you want to get in the pool and walk and do other strengthening exercises, I don't know about a jumping kind of thing. If it's a shallow water jumping kind of water aerobics, I probably wouldn't do that because it's going to be hard on your plantar fasciitis, and your ankle may or may not be ready for it. But seeing the physical therapist about getting a structured exercise program for the water to deal with both the plantar fasciitis and the ankle sprain would be useful. Any sideways movement is going to be good for strengthening your ankle. Any single leg balance exercises are going to be good for your ankle and may help your plantar fasciitis depending upon how it's dosed. So,
because one of the issues I'm facing is that I just feel so totally out of shape.
Sure.
You know, I feel like, I've started putting weight back on.
Right.
You know,
right.
But it's creeping up, because I'm not doing anything.
Right. Right.
And I hate riding stationary bikes. And everybody keeps saying, ride a stationary bike. I'm like, I hate those.
Right.
You
have to find something that you like to do. So the pool would be good. You can do deep water running, deep water cross-country skiing. If you can swim, you can swim. That would be fine for your ankle. You can do shallow water, walking and exercise. You could also do like tapes at home. Again, back to the yoga, Pilates kinds of things. You could do some of those videos at home. Would probably be useful as long as you avoid a lot of impact. Impact's going to be difficult.
Okay. All right.
Okay, but yoga's okay, right?
Yeah.
You said?
Yeah.
Okay, because I like yoga a lot, and I would like to be doing some more yoga.
Pick something you like.
Yeah?
Yep.
Thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate your call. I broke my toe, one of my toes here, about a month, 5 weeks ago now, and I mean, it just eliminated my daily 5K for...
Yeah.
I mean, I just couldn't do it.
Right.
And it's amazing how quickly pounds come back on. The minute you stop something like that.
Any time of the year, especially this time of the year with the holidays, it's tough enough without breaking your toe. But it's kind of an extreme example with our caller, Deb, is that if you start doing things too fast, with a broken toe, even if it's your little toe or your fourth toe, you change how you come down on your foot and how you push off your foot, then you start developing other problems. And so, to find some other medium to exercise in the meantime, it's is really a good thing.
Yep.
Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guests today. I'm Larry Mueller, talking about all those aches and pains and how to deal with them here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guests, Bill Boisenault from the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center, here to answer your physical therapy questions. Join in. Give us a call at 800-642-1234. Go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or comment there. Bonnie and Madison up next. Bonnie, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have a similar situation to one of the previous callers about a sprained ankle. I really did a good number on my ankle just a week ago. There is a little hairline fracture. I have been able to walk without crutches in the last day, but I'm noticing like I have it's pretty good, and then the next day it's not so good. Am I pushing it a little bit, or what can I expect within the next couple of weeks, I guess?
Oh, what a great question. So you're good and then you're not good. That's kind of a typical thing, especially if you've gotten rid of your crutches. You know, it may not be an all or none in terms of your crutches. It may be that you wean yourself off of your crutches, but if you're walking any distance, you're going to be on your feet for any length of time, that you continue to use at least one crutch. So the crutch should go in the opposite hand of the ankle that you sprained. And
okay.
And it can offload that ankle some. So, you know, not getting rid of them, but just weaning your way out of them may help smooth the transition out of the assistive device. And then are you doing any kind of rehab or therapy for it at this point?
Was not given any. I had great instructions through the week, but nothing. I did just go back in for a second x-ray this morning.
Okay.
And haven't heard the results of that yet.
Okay.
So it's just been a week.
Okay. It would be time to see somebody to get you started on the recovery, and that's typically range of motion exercises, up and down, in and out, figure eights, things like that. If you're still having swelling, sometimes they do those in a bucket of ice slush. Sometimes they'll recommend a contrast bath, which helps with swelling, and that's where you have a bucket of warm water and a bucket of ice slush, and you usually go in the warm for a minute and then the cold for 2 or 3 minutes and then back and forth, and that helps move some of the fluid out. And then starting on some gentle isometric exercise, and that is kind of pushing your foot against a stationary object to just train those muscles and remind them how to work so that they maintain some strength and that they're able to propel you in a normal gait pattern as the healing process progresses. But after you see somebody and you get initiated on a program and you start moving through it, then you'll have a better idea of what the time course for recovery will look like. At this point, it's too hard to tell.
Mm-hmm. Here we go. Thank you very much for
calling.
Appreciate the call. We had listener Ann wondering about a device to prevent strain on the neck. And we had a website to look at. So it's a hands-free book stand for hardcovers, paperbacks, cookbooks, textbooks, magazines, and others. I see a cell phone there, too, I think. It seems like overkill in a way, but...
It's basically a fancy stand to hold your book so that you don't have to hold your book or your device up in front of you, and you can adjust it to whatever height you want. It seems like it would be a fine situation for somebody who's sitting at home
or reads a lot.
Whatever. But it's not terribly portable. You know, it's like a floor lamp.
Yeah.
So it's not like you can walk down the street with it with your phone on it. People would stare.
Yeah. But the idea of bringing the book or the magazine or the phone, again, up to you, up toward your face, as opposed to us looking down at things. So, you know, there are bed pillows you can buy to kind of boost things up. I've had people use music stands, you know, doing things in the kitchen. You mentioned that before.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's the whole idea of kind of bringing it up off the surface, up closer to you and more eye level.
Music stands a good idea. I kind of like mm-hmm. that idea. Mm-hmm. It's in the kitchen. It wouldn't be bad.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Yeah.
We have a listener, Patty knows she has Technic and now knows what she needs to do in the future. How does she get rid of the pain right now, though? The stretches, does she do, or what does she do?
Well, from a postural perspective, again, if you think about the posture that you're in for hours and hours that led to this, the less time you spend in that posture, the better, and then kind of stretching in the opposite direction. So generally, again, kind of bringing your head and neck over the rest of your trunk, not looking up toward the ceiling, kind of keeping your eyes, your gaze parallel with the floor, bringing your chin back, and then bringing your shoulders down and back. Again, kind of recruits muscles in the shoulder blade area and the upper back area that supports you better. Some people, if this is going on long enough, they become adaptively tight. The pec muscles in the front of the shoulders can get tight, and that can put somebody in a rounded shoulder posture or position. So we have what's called a corner stretch. They stand facing a corner. Elbows are extended, hands are about shoulder height, and they lean into the corner, which allows for a stretch in the front.
Sure.
You just don't want to lead with your chin. Again, you keep your head neck over your trunk and kind of lean in toward the corner to stretch the pecs can help. If somebody's having symptoms that are extending down into their arms or hands or any numbness or tingling, then they should go get seen. But from a postural perspective, you know, if you can change what your normal posture has been that got you into this trouble, and a couple other stretches I mentioned sometimes can help people.
Elizabeth in Appleton, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Actually, I've learned so much already from listening to the show today, but I called initially about two problems, and then I thought of another one since you mentioned the hand tingling. Both, I had a couple of accidents. About a year and a half ago, I fell out of a kayak and was holding onto the paddle with my wrist. It was shallow, just in a little shallow river. It was caught in an eddy, but I did something to my wrist that I can no longer open doorknobs and things like that. It seems to be related to a place on my right thumb. And I haven't had it looked at. I've just figured it would go away, but I'm almost 59. It's not going away. And then 2.5 years ago, I fell down some stairs and I injured my left ankle. It continues to be visibly swollen on the outside near your ankle bone. I try to walk. I'm trying to do things, but I can't do squats, or if I happen to step at an angle, I get this excruciating pain. And I did have that x-rayed, and they didn't see anything wrong. But I just would like to know what I might do to regain those joints, regain the use of the joints. And then I do actually have problems when I do exercise a lot. I was helping split wood this weekend and load wood into a truck. And whenever I exercise in gardening or something outside extensively, my arms go to sleep at night. They become really numb, and I'm not sure what that's about.
Well, let's start with the wrist, and it kind of hurts at your thumb. The first thing that comes to my mind is a navicular fracture. So if you got your paddle caught and a twist and it's hurting at the base of your thumb, that's where your navicular bone is in your wrist, and it's notorious for seeming like it's not a bad injury, and you wait and wait, and it has a very high incidence of non-union. And when you have a non-union navicular, you end up with chronic wrist problems. So in terms of your wrist, I'd suggest that you go in and have somebody look at it and make sure that they get navicular views when they look at your wrist.
Okay.
In terms of your ankle, continuing to have swelling is not great. It's usually, if it's acute swelling, it's usually a sign that there's something going on the inside of your ankle. It's possible that things were missed on a standard radiograph. So there are a number of possibilities. One is it's still a garden variety sprain, and you have some chronic ankle instability that would resolve with some structured therapy. That's okay. One possibility. Another possibility is that you have what we would call an osteochondral fracture, and that is the bone at the top of your foot that sits between your two ankle bones. Sometimes when you torque it, you shear off a little piece of bone, and sometimes a cartilage wouldn't necessarily show up on a standard radiograph view. And that's a problem that really should be known and addressed because it will lead to ankle osteoarthritis.
Oh,
so your description of when you turn and it catches a certain way that you have a lot of pain, that's suggestive of an issue, a possible osteochondral issue. So you really should have that checked out as well. And just make sure you know what you're dealing with before somebody just, you know, says, oh, it's just a garden variety ankle sprain and you need some exercises.
All right.
And Bill was going to talk
Elizabeth,
about your arms.
Yeah, the numbness thing. Do you ever get that at any other time besides when you're doing the kind of work that you mentioned?
It started when I lived in California some years ago, 15 years ago, and I was digging dirt to lower the level of the dirt around the house, and I had a limited amount of time I could use the dumpster. And yeah. Since then, I find whenever I work hard in the garden, in the spring, in the summer, or in this case of doing the woodwork, it's better now. But when this first started, it lasted for about 6 months, and it wakes me up at night because it hurts or it's just irritating,
yeah.
You know. And I try different positions, but I thought, you know, I talked to a massage therapist, and she thought it might be tight muscles against nerves, so it's like nerve pain.
All right. And maybe 15 seconds.
Yeah. I think, Elizabeth, I would go in and be seen for the wrist and the ankle, as Laurie described, and then mention the numbness, tingling to whoever you see. It could be your neck. It could be carpal tunnel type of presentation, but they should be able to help you sort that out.
And thanks for calling. We'll be back with Bill and Laurie right after this look at the news. Well, whether it's an old injury that you just can't seem to fully recover from, or maybe it's a new twinge that's made an appearance, you may have some aches and pains to deal with. And it can be hard to know just what's an annoyance and what eventually goes away on its own and what requires some more attention. Larry Mueller here, and really glad to have Laurie Tant Brody and Bill Boisenault with us to share what they know about dealing with those aches and pains. Bill is a senior physical therapist at the UW Hospitals and Clinics. Always a pleasure, Bill. Thank you so much.
Great to be back. Thank you, Larry.
And Laurie Tant Brody, physical therapist, athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. And Laurie, thank you again as well.
You're welcome. And you know, it's good to be here on behalf of UW Spine and Sports Medicine Center. But we had a caller earlier who couldn't stay on the line who asked about free clinics or low-cost clinics. I know that the UWPT program staffs a free clinic, Bill.
Yeah, there are some pro bono clinics or free clinics, and not just in the Madison area, but other areas as well. We've had other callers inquire in a similar vein.
Mm-hmm.
If that person is willing to call back and talk to Judith and just leave his contact information, we'll be happy to contact him and try to find a pro bono clinic that's close to him. And given that information. But yes, there are some clinics. Actually, there are clinics in general that may offer pro bono services. They may not necessarily advertise it, but if somebody calls and just states, I have no insurance and I'm wondering if physical therapy may be helpful. But there are clinics where that's their design.
Right, right. And
free
some
clinics.
I know some private clinics will see patients who don't have insurance who just for a flat fee, and they sort of negotiate that flat fee on a case-by-case basis. So
and how that's paid.
Yeah.
And
so don't stay away just because you don't have insurance, but call a clinic and see what they can offer for you. And if they can't see you, perhaps they can recommend another place that might.
Yeah.
Probably not going to advertise it online, but or maybe some will.
I don't know. Mm-hmm.
There may
I'm
be some
sure.
free clinics that would advertise online. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Sure. Maddie in Milwaukee, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I had in June some pretty significant back pain, and I was seen at a spine care clinic in Milwaukee. My doctor initially suspected maybe a bulging disc, but he also said that I had some SI joints, like mechanical issues. So I went through PT, and I also saw a chiropractor, and most of the issues resolved. The back pain is pretty much gone, but I've had sciatic nerve pain that hasn't gone away. And the chiropractor told me, oh, it may take a while, but it's been almost 6 months. And I just wonder, is it possible that there's still a bulging disc? Do I need to ask for an MRI? And if it's just a lingering symptom of the SI joint issues, are there other things I can be doing to, I guess, calm the sciatic pain? Because it's at times really painful.
Right. Betty, are you having any numbness or tingling with this down into your leg or legs?
It's more, I can't say numbness or tingling. It's kind of this, just feels like a shooting pain that, and it shoots down to my calf.
Okay. Okay. Well, usually when people recover, there are certain types of back problems that can result in pressure on a nerve. And so you have back pain and leg symptoms, and including sciatica is a possibility. And shooting pain, sharp pain, you know, burning pain is usually a nerve that's telling you it's not happy. The typical sequence is that the leg pain needs to go away before the back pain starts resolving. So what you describe is just the opposite of what the typical recovery process is. And so I think of one of a couple possibilities, that the sciatic nerve may not have been irritated in your back, but maybe more in the area of the piriformis or the buttock area, and you might have had two separate issues going on. And so that would be one thing that maybe, again, a reevaluation to make sure they look at the pelvis and the sciatic notch area and see if there's another area where that nerve could be irritated or compressed. There are other types of disc conditions that can progress and back pain goes away and you're left with leg symptoms. By now, time alone is going to take care of this. You should be better, certainly by now. It's 6 months. And so maybe, you know, being evaluated, looking outside the low back area as to where this nerve is being irritated may be useful.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Maddie. Mary in Oshkosh. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. Say, I have something that kind of just sprang up over the weekend, although there may be something related to something that was lingering. That's my right knee. And this weekend I started to experience very sharp, knife-like pains coming out the outside lower edge of the knee when I kneel on it, something similar to a genuflect. And it's very sensitive now, to the point where I don't want to put any kneeling kind of stress onto that knee. Prior to that, I was getting some very achy type of a pain in it when I would kneel on it getting into bed, you know, on something very soft. And that's been going on for about 2 months. I'm hoping you give me some advice as to what's going on and what course of action should I be taking.
So let me ask a couple more questions about it. Does it only bother you when you kneel on it?
Yes.
Okay, so going up and down stairs,
nothing,
walking up and down inclines. Okay.
No.
And so you're kneeling directly on the front of your knee. So when you say genuflect, that knee is down, or like double knee kneeling, you're putting pressure directly in the front of the knee.
Yes.
Okay, and it hurts
on the kneecap.
On the kneecap. And it hurts on the outside of your kneecap?
Or? Yes, on the like where my on the outside edge as opposed to the in between my legs.
Right. But it's more around your kneecap, not way out to the side or towards the back.
Yes, it's directly to, if I feel my kneecap, the pain, and if the kneecap were like a square, it would be on the lower outside corner.
Okay. All right. So it's probably some arthritis on the undersurface of your kneecap where it encounters the bone below it. So your kneecap is embedded in your big thigh muscle or quadriceps tendon, and it makes a joint with the big ball at the end of your thigh bone. And what we tend to see in many people is a little bit of a tipping of your kneecap to where there's more compressive forces on the outside of your kneecap. And then when you kneel directly on it, you increase those compressive forces. So my guess is you have a really arthritic spot right underneath that corner of your kneecap. So
Does it matter that I'm a little bit knock-kneed or actually a lot knock-kneed?
Yes. You could also have some arthritis in the outside of your knee joint itself, but I would think that that would give you symptoms at times other than when you're just kneeling on your knee. Mm-hmm. So it probably changes the mechanics. So if you're really knock-kneed, it's going to pull your kneecap a little bit more to the outside, and it's probably increasing those compressive forces. So what I would do is you could go see a physical therapist who would examine your whole lower extremity alignment. They might try some specific stretching for your kneecap, maybe some taping to help realign your kneecap to unload that area that's contacting the two arthritic surfaces that are contacting each other. They might make a recommendation for some kind of a knee sleeve, as well as some strengthening exercises for around your hip that have been shown to improve this kind of a problem. But it's been 2 months. If it was going to get better on its own, it would have.
No, it seems to be getting worse.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'd go in and see somebody.
Okay.
And get started on a program.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, thanks, Mary. And Sue in Harmony, Minnesota, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. My husband's twin brother has just been diagnosed with stenosis, and now my husband's also having some back pain and thinks he's headed in that direction. So wondered what he could do for exercise. My second question is, I just got a Kindle. You mentioned a website that had a structure that was kind of bulky. I'm interested in that. And thirdly, I have MS and am in a wheelchair, and wondered if you had any yoga exercise tapes that I could do seated.
Okay, first with your husband and the brother, stenosis implies narrowing and is a spinal condition, and narrowing to the degree where there's pressure on nerves or possibly the spinal cord. There's different causes of stenosis. You can have congenital. Some people are just born with a small canal, small openings. The bony elements of the spine are smaller. That can result in pressure. For some people, it's due to degenerative changes, arthritic changes. So it depends a little bit about your husband's brother, what's causing his stenosis in terms of is your brother at risk for this or not. Generally with stenosis that you truly have, you don't only have back pain or neck pain. You're having symptoms into your legs or your arms if it's up in your neck. And symptoms, not just pain, but pins and needles, numbness, weakness. So if your husband's having any of those kinds of symptoms, he should go see a physician, and they would do some imaging and try to figure out what's causing the pressure on the nerves. If it's back only, it doesn't mean that he has stenosis, and it doesn't necessarily mean that he's at risk for developing it either. In terms of exercises, you know, if your husband's still functional and doing most everything, you know, as we talked about over the years, kind of a general flexibility program focusing on the hips as well as the trunk, some strengthening around the hips and core work combined with some aerobic activity. It's usually that combination that is the best combination for people. And pain you don't want to work through is sharp pain, shooting pain, pinching pain, also as a general rule. So that's how I would answer the stenosis question. The Kindle and the website.
Yeah, it's. Do you have a pencil handy or a pen?
Ew.
It's tiny. So T I N Y, U R T. Got that. TINYURT.com, and then there's a forward slash.
Is that a T or an L, Larry? T-I-N-Y, I think that's U-R-L.
Oh, I'm sorry, it is. TINYURL.com/NHA.
Okay.
And then it's 7J15. And we have it, we actually put it up on It's called the Levo. Now Judith's just telling me it's called the Levo Book Stand, L-E-V-O.
Okay, wonderful.
So, so there. So if you go Levo Book Stand, you're probably.
And then, in terms of your question about seated yoga, off the top of my head, I'm not familiar with any particular video tape of that, but. Gosh, I'm thinking somebody's done it. So just Google it and see if you can find it. I can't say off the top of my head, but I'm guessing there's something out there. If not, well, geez, we should make one, shouldn't we?
Yes.
In our spare time.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
There we go. Thank you, Sue, for calling. Appreciate your call. I hope that was helpful.
Oh, yes. Thank you so very much.
You're welcome. Don in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Don.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have ankle pain. My left foot started on the left side, migrated now over to the right side. I've seen a PT. He gave me some exercises to stretch and strengthen it. It hurts when I walk. I noticed that my shoes were wearing down severely on the outside, so I changed my shoes, and I got the same kind of shoes, Keens that I like. They're very good. And I'm still experiencing a lot of pain. Today it was shooting and sharp pains.
What are they saying is the cause of your ankle pain?
They didn't say. They just said that it was stiff, and they measured it at 8 degrees, and my right one was also 8 degrees, so it didn't seem that far off. But he gave it a little bit of massage and then told me to do these exercises.
Well, I mean, people typically don't just show up with ankle pain for no reason. There was no incident that started it off? You just woke up one day and it hurt? Or
well, I played basketball when I was in high school, and I sprained it probably 6 or 7 times. And
okay.
I'm 64, and these things are just creeping up on me.
Okay. Well, I think the first step is figuring out the cause of it. So, you know, lots of people have multiple ankle sprains, and then they don't necessarily show up with pain later. Frankly, ankle sprains is not associated with long-term osteoarthritis or those kinds of changes in your ankle. So understanding better why you're having pain would better direct your treatment. So the question is, is it coming from your back if you're having pain in both feet? Is it some systemic problem that's giving you...
one foot.
Oh, you said it was left and then you said it went to your right.
I started on the left side of my left foot and then went to the right side of my
left. Oh, the right side of your left foot. Okay. I thought you meant to your right foot. Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that clarification. Mm-hmm. So again, okay. So then you go back to why your left foot and not your right. There's a number of factors that could contribute to that: foot posture, leg length, pelvic and low back position, lifestyle, how you work, how you stand, if you walk on a canted road. I mean, there's a number of factors that someone should look at to figure out why you're having problems and then try to figure out the underlying cause of that problem. You know, there are things like some congenital issues that may have caused you to have multiple ankle sprains that are just showing up now, like, you know, talonavicular bars. So there's a number of things that could go on. So my point is figuring out why you're having pain and the cause of your pain should direct the treatment.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes it helps. I don't know if you have pain all the time or not, but sometimes I don't want people injuring themselves, but it helps me if they come in and that ankle is hurting a little bit, even a little bit, helps me sort out, is it tendon, is it muscle belly, is it the joint itself, or a combination? So if you're pain-free most of the time, something if you come in when you're hurting a little bit can help from a diagnostic perspective.
When appointments are set sometimes
three months
in advance, it's hard to really predict that.
I agree.
Right.
Well, I guess I'm still confused how to figure out the cause.
Well, you know, a good exam should help sort that out, looking at you really from low back down to the floor. If your foot's really stiff, you know, I mean, the thing that I keep coming back to in the back of my head, so if you've had multiple sprains and your foot is stiff, those things are contradictory. People who have multiple sprains have a loose foot. So if you're stiff, how come you have a stiff foot if you sprained it multiple times? And one of the causes is something called a tarsal coalition. And that is you have some additional ligaments in your midfoot that cause your foot to be stiff. And as a result, you sprain your ankle because your foot can't accommodate to the surface. So if you have a tarsal coalition.
My foot is not stiff. I can move it in all directions.
Okay. I thought you said that they said your foot was stiff. You could move it 8 degrees.
Well, 8 degrees, but my other one was 8 degrees. So I thought, you know, for me, that's probably not
out of whack.
Okay. It's hard for me to say without a complete exam. So my point is, again, if the physical therapist can't figure out why you're having pain, then see your primary physician, see a foot and ankle specialist, and that will better direct your treatment.
There we go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Kate in Madison woke up yesterday morning with severe tenderness in the area of her occipital bone on the left side of her head. Almost feel like she got hit by something. Wondering if, in fact, this could be due to muscular injury. Seems more tender than achy, but there's no bruising. Movement is fairly uncomfortable.
Yeah, usually when there are muscles in the suboccipital area, you know, at the base of the skull area, but when people injure that area, they know what injured it.
Yeah.
You know, either a motor vehicle accident, a whiplash type of injury. The fact that, I mean, there are people, you can wake up, you sleep in a little funny position, you can wake up with a stiff neck and sore neck, and it's possible that to happen in the upper cervical area. You know, but for most people, within a couple of days, it starts resolving and going away.
Okay.
So she could use a combination. As long as she's not having any numbness or tingling in her hands or feet, there's no dizziness with this or lightheadedness with this. Using a combination of ice and then heat maybe help in gentle stretching of that area. But if it seems to be getting worse, not better, after a couple of days, I'd go in and be seen.
Dennis in Ripon, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. I've had incidents with my ankle probably four times in the last month. It always happens at night while I'm sleeping. It's like a cramp, but it's on the outside of the ankle, and it's very, very tight. It's happened with my left foot and my right foot. As soon as I stand up and put pressure on it, it seems to go away. I'm just wondering what it is and what I
can do. All right, I've got about a minute to resolve that issue. What do you think?
Is it better when you start moving, like you hang your legs over the edge of the bed and start moving your ankles, and it's better?
No, not until I put pressure on, until I stand up.
Okay. And it's just happened four times just in the last month?
About that, yeah. I would say probably four times, and it's a rude awakening.
Yeah.
Yeah, I bet.
Yes, it is. So... the first things we look at when people are complaining of cramps in their calves is fluids. Are you having enough fluids? Are your nutrients in line, that is, enough potassium, bananas, things like bananas, potatoes, ketchup, things like that? And then we think about things farther up. That is there something coming from your back? Do you have some stenosis? Are you sleeping in a certain position where you're cutting off the circulation to your lower legs and making those cramp? Have you changed your activity where you're getting a lot of fatigue in your calf muscles, more so than you had previously? So those are the kinds of questions we ask to try to figure out what's causing the cramp, because there are a number of factors that could be causing it.
Some things to think about. Thank you so much for calling. And Bill and Lori, thank you so much. You're back next year, January 19th.
next year.
That's right. Yes.
That's right. Oh,
look
my.
Forward to it.
It'll be fun.
Thank you so much for being with us today. Bill Boisenoff from the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Lori Tyne-Brody, physical therapist with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. They'll be back on January 19th. Tomorrow we'll visit with baker Paul Novak about holiday breads, and Elizabeth LeBeau is here to talk about holiday candy making. Stay with us.